Broadcast is live. Yes.
Okay. Now we're live.
Yeah. Howdy, Joe. You know, it's that Mac gear you're using, buddy. I told you about that. That Apple stuff.
Did you replace that thing that's about to die yet?
No, I figured out it was that it was sitting on a surface where wasn't getting enough ventilation into it. And so it had been running hot for a couple of days at that point, because I like to keep some charts up running continuously. Yeah. And so then I figured that I moved to another location where I'm on a glass desktop, tabletop thing. And it seems to work better. It's not clicking. So, but anyhow, yeah, I thought that
a reconditioned Mac will cost you like, 2 hours of yield farming.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing I noticed. I don't know if you saw that little sell off last night around maybe it was 8 o'clock. I think it bottomed out ETH at like 384 or something.
Yeah.
So I was watching that, and it was, weekends are always light, so it's easier to move. Because you look at the volume, there wasn't enough volume to really move it like that. And I'm telling you, I was sitting there going, oh shit, I'm up like 100% here. Maybe I should bail. But then I held to it. I diamond handed it. And, I was glad I did, because a lot of stuff that I was thinking about trimming, I didn't. Nice. And now it's back, above where I was going to, much further above where I was going to liquidate. So then we saw the characteristic 4 a.m. buying coming into the market, the European buying. And then I wasn't really looking at, I don't have the chart up right now, but I wasn't really looking at U.S., but it obviously seems like there's some buying going on. So
absolutely,
that's where yield farming holds you in and you don't freak out. Because you look at, you're still pulling down 300%, 200%, 500%, which clearly offsets like a little 2.5 point, adjustment. And so you got to remember that when you start feeling, not going to have time. And then it's bouncing back. So again, looking at the buy line, there was still like, 80 million sitting there just on Binance. So then I held to it. But I know we talked a little bit earlier about Tether. And yep. There was some good press over the weekend. I actually had people sending me this article, from up north. And, it's a pretty good article, but, because it talks a lot about history and it doesn't, they don't have all the information, obviously. And there's a big misconception about, how it works. I mean, I still see that even this reporter, Zeke, he does. It's like they act like you can show up at a bank with a dump truck full of cash and get Tether.
Right.
And I don't think you could still do that. Maybe there's some shady stuff, but I've never heard of that since, really cracked down on that of some time ago with Patriot Act, because that's about money laundering and more of the counter-terror stuff. Not
exactly.
Not like, you and me trading something.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't expect Tether to be a charity, right? It never said it was going to be a charity. So if you have lots of deposits of people's money, how do you make money on it, right? You make money on it by, investing it. And that's what they've done. Some of it looks a little sketchy. Some of those banks relationships are interesting, but I don't know. I think overall, I'm still not that worried about Tether. How do you feel?
Again, I try to figure out where is this coming from. Obviously BTC Maxi seem to have had it in for Tether for quite a while. And then I started thinking about, U.S. regulators and, we're talking about USDC and Circle and their IPO coming up and, they have to fully comply with everybody if you're doing an IPO. And so I'm wondering if this is, if there's something to do with that too. That maybe USDC is kind of the first anointed one for stable by U.S. regulatory people, and they're trying to get people to shift into it from Tether. I'm not sure. I don't really know. I'm just speculating. But the thing I thought was pretty interesting is they sort of feel like people go and buy Tether from Tether. I've never done it. I've used it on exchanges, but newbies coming into new exchanges when they're buying with a debit card or a credit card. I'm not sure. This is mainly international, I guess, but they're usually buying Tether out of the gate.
Right.
Because, they're from fiat and it makes them feel comfortable. So, but that's not going to say Tether. That exchange has already procured Tether for their platform.
Correct. So they've already given them the money for it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's talk in here about Celsius and you know, Mashinsky's super smart guy, CEO of Celsius. I mean, they basically moved everything out of New York into Tel Aviv just because of the regulatory environment. But, you know, they, there's an article saying in here how they took $1 billion in Tether. But to take that billion, they still have to post collateral.
Right.
And so they have to post double. So they got to put up $2 billion in BTC to get that billion in Tether.
Yep.
And then that floats around on their exchange. So, you know, I don't know, whatever the backup of Tether is, if people are to get Tether, have to post double, you know, the big, you know, Celsius, crypto, all those types of guys, you know, then whatever the grade is of the commercial paper or whatever that's sort of there in the mix too, I mean, even if that's, there might be some really bad Chinese paper in there, you know, SOE, you know, just ghost company paper, who knows? I think that it's probably, that risk is offset by all the other postings of BTC and ETH. Now, yeah, you know, if BTC goes to nothing, you know, then there's going to be a Tether problem. But, you know, the problem's already occurred at that point with BTC going to nothing. And I just don't see that happening.
No, you know, I don't know.
They just need to clean up their act. They're going to have to be regulated as a bank.
Yeah.
Tether, it seems like to me.
Well, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to them. I just want us all out of centralized exchanges, frankly. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, centralized stable coins. I want us to start using some of these algo coins. They're well built. They're strong. They have great algorithms behind it. Great communities. The more we put into it, the more they will be stabilized. You know, it's just time for the community to get out of USDC and USDT. USDT, yeah. I'm not like overly concerned about it. I still trade with it on centralized exchanges. And that, but USDC, from a regulatory perspective, that's the one that can get shut down. So I don't know. Just, it's, to me, yeah, it's a little silly for us to be running decentralized finance on centralized stable coins.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And when you look at, say, Tether, you know, I mean, obviously the characters involved, you know, I mean, they're not, you know, PhDs in, you know, corporate finance or something like that. They, you know, they're entrepreneurs,
right?
Whatever caliber. What you're talking about, what we like about DeFi so much, is there's a great saying. It's like, it's, you know, trust the math, don't trust the people. And,
right. You
know, when you see characters on top of some of these that, you know, maybe rub you the wrong way for some reason, or maybe, you know, just look less than credible, you know, that's, to me, that's making a bigger argument for decentralized finance in that, you know, the math is good in all these DAO platforms. People can't do anything. So to me, you know, you basically take out the sort of, you know, the incentives for people to cross the line, you know, ethically, let's just leave it at that, you know, with the math. And so that's what we look at a lot.
Yeah,
is absolutely that piece.
Yep.
So, but right. I thought this was good. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's good. So this weekend, well, end of last week, this weekend, there was a bit of a blow up. And I find this interesting, and I don't know if I know all the details yet or not, but there is this VC firm, div.vc on Twitter, or Divergence Ventures on Twitter, and they have been slammed all weekend. And the reason they're being slammed, here's the context of what I understand of it. They were early stage investors in Ribbon Finance, right? So Ribbon's a pretty popular, respected platform. And they were given the heads up by the team at Ribbon that there was going to be an airdrop for Ribbon wallets, for people that have held or trade or used Ribbon in their wallets, right? So Divergence Ventures goes home and starts putting $1,000 in hundreds of wallets of Ribbon, right? Mm. Because they figure, well, there's going to be an airdrop. Let's go make money, right? Let's get a ton of Ribbon. And everyone is outraged at the venture capital firm for gaming it, right? And look, it doesn't their behavior is shitty because they got a ton of money out of a project that, you know, they really shouldn't have gamed the system like that because they had advanced knowledge, right? Who knows what the legal ramifications of that are. But
yeah,
here's the thing. And this will maybe piss some people off, but it's a venture capital firm. Number one, I think the real problem lies in Ribbon telling the venture capitalists in advance. Because I'm sorry, what do you think a venture capitalist is going to do if given an opportunity to get free money, right? What are they going to do? They're going to do exactly what Divergence Ventures did. So why would you give heads up to your venture capitalist that the airdrop is coming? Why wouldn't you just notify them like everybody else gets notified? And whatever they've done with the protocol, then they'll get their reward for. Now, Divergence has since apologized, and people aren't real happy with the apology, and has claimed that they have returned all of the ribbon that they received. But some of the detectives on Twitter who have just been vigilantly going after them have shown that these guys actually have not returned everything and that they actually had more wallets that they were playing the game with. So the whole thing is really interesting to me. Like, I think number one, I know you're grateful to your venture capitalists for helping you get off the ground. I think that's awesome, you know. But if you want to avoid this kind of crap, don't give them heads up that there's going to be an airdrop. And if there's going to be an airdrop and you give them heads up, then you should expect that they're going to game it, because their job is to make money for their partners. That's their job. And any opportunity they have to make more money, they have an obligation to do it. Now, they've destroyed their reputation.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to want to take money from them because of that. But anyway, go ahead. Joe? Hello, Joe.
Yeah, I'm here. You're breaking up a little bit. Oh, okay. Yeah, you can't hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, I used to run a venture capital fund years ago. And, you know, there's in a regular, let's just call it U.S. regulated company, there would be discussions at the board level about the airdrop, let's say, right, or the share issuance or whatever you would call it. And they're trying to come up with a comparable. So they would know it from there. But they're still not supposed to trade on that. And, you know, creating all these wallets to defeat the objective of the airdrop is going counter to the interest of the company you invested in.
Right.
So I think I understand, you know, venture capital, vulture capitalists, all of that. And it's in their blood to do that. But it's, you know, they'd be crucified if it was a public company or a right, private company that was going in the U.S. for sure.
Right.
But I like the fact that the community is self-policing.
It's beautiful.
And yeah. And that is kind of what crypto is really all about. So it almost serves as the regulators.
Exactly.
In my mind. And, you know, so I think that the harm in brand and, you know, people wanting to do deals with them in the future is probably going to be much more than whatever they gained off of this airdrop. And then further compounding it by, I guess, from what some have said, you know, not really doing the mea culpa, but then not really following through on it. Yeah. You know, that's even worse to me.
Yeah. They returned the first batch that they got, but then like this guy here, Gabagool, actually track down all kinds of wallets associated with them, right? But you're right. That is the brilliance of DeFi, is that everything is out there when it comes to security breaches, when it comes to the actions of founders, when it comes to the actions of venture capitalists. It's really hard to hide, you know? And that's the crazy thing from a regulatory perspective, because what regulators haven't figured out is what a gold mine blockchain is for them, right? Their level of being able to get evidence and prosecute and go after the bad actors is incredibly open relative to what they have to do if they want to go after banks or other firms that are not open book because every transaction's on the blockchain. So I think you're right. I think that's a really good point. And it's just very interesting. Just very interesting that they were caught and now have destroyed their reputation, because even after they were caught, they still didn't own up to everything they had done. So,
yeah. And, you know, you're right. Is a lot of people, you know, I saw more headlines over the weekend talking about, that spying scandal with that couple that were trying to sell technology secrets to a foreign government, U.S. people.
Uh-huh.
And so the headline says, wanted cryptocurrency for first payment.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then everybody's like, oh, my God, crypto so bad. You know, which the bad thing is what they were doing was the bad thing.
Exactly.
And then they asked for cryptocurrency, which just shows the stupidity because, you know, I mean, these wallet addresses are all mapped.
Exactly.
You know, there were like 2 years, 3 years ago, there was two companies at least that were going through every Bitcoin wallet address that exists and IDing them and who they belong to. And they probably didn't get all of them.
No, they're still doing it though. Coinbase bought one of the companies. There's another one that's doing it. This is like a gold mine of evidence for prosecutions.
Yeah. And so it's just like phones, you know, people do all this stuff on their phone and just don't realize how, you know, I mean, like, you know, there's a crime, let's say a bank robbery. And then the cops go to Google or somebody and say, hey, I want every phone in that within 100 feet of that location that was active. And they start looking at all of those and then start trying to figure, without knowing who it is at this point.
Right.
But then start trying to figure out who would be the logical ones. And then they go for warrants on those.
Yeah.
So, and then they basically, you know, the phone is like a fingerprint. Otherwise, how could you book plane tickets and move money and all of this? I mean, it's completely, you know, a forensic evidence chain. So, you know, to me, it's like, you know, we all know the number one medium of money laundering is not crypto. It's exactly. U.S. dollar.
Exactly.
Exactly. Because it's anonymous. So to me, I think that this is good in the long run. It'll sort out bad actors and, you know, get a better playing field. And then, you know, the regulation, you know, I sort of get it to a certain extent because, I mean, you remember like in 1718, there were all those people pitching crypto with, you know, chicks in bikinis and jacuzzis touting coins and people buying and, you know, people that are buying that, you know, don't really aren't evaluating it, you know, like the people buying, say, the majority of people buying like meme coins, they're not, you know, really evaluating what it is, how many tokens there are, et cetera. They're just buying because they see it. Somebody tells them to, or somebody says this is the one. And that's what I think these guys are really trying to prevent. Now, the argument is, shouldn't people be allowed just to stupidly spend money anywhere they want? And I kind of think yes, but
yes.
I also don't think that grandmothers and stuff should be hustled when they're sitting in their lazy boy watching, you know, some Lawrence Welk or whatever they watch these days. And then somebody's, you know, pitching them a shady deal to, you know, clean up the world and they all want to get on and they give money, you know, so it's got to be balanced. It will get balanced eventually. But
yeah, you know,
all
agree.
These things are a process. So.
Absolutely. Here's the Etherscan where they were finding the transactions. You see Divergence Ventures, they're labeled wallet. And I guess that's the 702 Ether they returned back to Ribbon 2 days ago, almost 3 days ago. So just very interesting. Like, look, you're busted. The blockchain never lies, you know?
Yeah. So again, trust the math, trust the chain.
Yep.
Assume everybody could be a bad actor.
Exactly.
That's what I do.
Exactly.
That's why you see that thing here. Don't do what we say, you know, unless you want to. And but use what we're showing you, these techniques. When you find something you like, you know, look at the tokens, how many are out there. Look at the engagement in the Telegram channels, how many people are in there.
Yep.
You know, look at what's going on. Look at the comparables.
Yep.
I mean, lately I've been looking at, you know, I'm a big fan of those Jarvis Labs guys, Ben Lilly, Espresso, all of them. And, you know, he had a really good, you know, his sort of guess, I guess, is that, you know, well, the Q4 pop across the board, which I think is consistent with what everybody's saying. But then he's kind of saying a rotation then into layer one coins and then the higher protocols, you know, the DeFi protocol coins, then to like NFTs and smaller ones. And so I started looking at like on DeFi Llama, you know, the TVL rankings and the, you know, chains and total value lock on the different chains. And, you know, you see some pretty interesting things there when you look at like market cap over TVL. And, you know, so you look at comps. So, you know, the top chains, you know, you see everything from, you know, Ethereum being almost a 3.0 market cap to TVL. But, right. You know, Phantom, Solana's a 4.1. Phantom is a 1.02. So wow. It's the lowest of all of them, and it's the fifth biggest. So when I look at that, I say, okay, undervalued. And yeah. Then when I look at, like, say, TVL for protocols, you know, ratios there, anything for Aave is like a 0.25. A lot of them are, like, Compound's 0.17. But Curve's like 0.067. And, you know, I'm a big Curve supporter. So
yeah.
I look at that, again, undervalued. Eventually, money rotates into undervalued items. So
right.
Anything you look at, think of these techniques. You know, start on CoinGecko and then just go through it. And, you know, use the different strategies that we talk about and others talk about. But, you know, again, do your own research. Pick the stuff you like. And not just because it's a cool concept, but really dig in and look at execution risk. Like, can they really do what they're trying to do?
Yeah.
They can be good people who can't execute. They can be bad people who won't execute. So, you know, just kind of take those techniques and use it to your benefit.
Yep, absolutely. So this morning I was listening to the Bankless podcast, dropping off my daughter at school, and I had seen this last week, but I hadn't really looked closely at it. But this French bank had already issued last year a bond, ERC-20 bond token, and now they propose to MakerDAO a $20 million DAI loan in exchange for their bond tokens. But the interesting thing that was coming out of the conversation on Bankless this morning, it was actually this guy, the founder of MakerDAO, Rune Christensen, first of all, it was just something that people in the community were working with the bank on. It wasn't like the founders of the MakerDAO had to work with the bank, blah, 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 blah. It's an open system. They can do it. And so they put a proposal to the community and the community will vote on it. But the really interesting thing was he started, and I hadn't really thought about this, but he started talking to me about the fact that people are out there taking negative interest rates on their investments in traditional finance right now. And it's like, if there was ever a time that these people are going to come running into this, it's now. And so then they're going to look at like really conservative plays like MakerDAO, you know, and others that have been around a long time, don't pay big yields, have security, have built up trust. I think you've worked in that world, but I can't imagine being on the other side of it and taking negative interest rates on investments. And to me, it's just astounding that it even exists because I don't live in it and don't understand it all. But further to that, it's like, why wouldn't they be shaving off some of it to put it over here just for the risk?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it depends on what sector, but a lot of these guys are playing with pension fund money. And I know Brad had to let someone in real quickly, so I'll carry the ball for a while. But they're playing with pension fund money, and there are very specific rules to that. And the number one rule is don't lose it. So I think risk is much more at the forefront of their mind, or risk mitigation versus capital appreciation. Most of the time they're in, you know, super high-end instruments that, you know, have insurance or backing by sovereign entities, not, you know, speculating. But I think that, you know, the others, like the wealth management clients and groups like that, that, you know, there are, you know, different ones are marketing or proposing different asset allocation models to their clients. And I've seen anything from a quarter of 1% to a full 1% that they're saying some type of crypto allocation. Now, they're probably first thinking about BTC ETFs and, you know, things like that, or MicroStrategy, or, you know, someone who's serving as a proxy for that, which is something where you're going to see that shift. So just to offset those things. But I don't think the bond guys and people like that can actually invest in that, at least not in the US market. You know, it's kind of interesting with MicroStrategy. I was, you know, looking at them today, and you know, because I was just thinking about it over the weekend, I was like, what was Saylor's buy price on all this BTC? And, you know, and he has, you know, 2.9 billion in BTC now at MicroStrategy at an average cost buy of, I think, 25,000.
His and, average you know, price that, is 25K? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's what's interesting, though. Then you look at, okay, who's the biggest shareholder of MicroStrategy? Any guesses?
Blackstone. Michael Saylor.
The answer. Yeah, no, Blackstone is his largest. I think they own more than Saylor. Okay.
Okay.
So, because there was an incident years ago, 20 years ago, where, you know, MicroStrategy got in a bind for, I don't know what you call it. Can't do it anymore, but they would sign a contract with 10 years of data mining or whatever they were doing. And then they booked all that revenue in that quarter to hit the number, and they got popped for it. And the stock went from like 470 to 2. In a couple of hours, B of A called their loans. They fired everybody. It was a big mess, but that was a long time ago. So I think he lost a lot of equity on that one.
Yeah.
But so I know I was reading recently that Blackstone, I think, is the largest shareholder, which, you know, also means they most likely control the board.
Sure.
So to me, I look at Blackstone and I'm like, they're like, yeah, run with this, because they have to approve these buys. You know,
right.
It's not like they're just saying, go do it. They're doing the fundraising for it. So it's kind of like a proxy.
I like
public
that.
Company Bitcoin proxy, but Blackstone doesn't get any fallout in case he does something that goes awry with the regulators. It's all on Saylor and MicroStrategy, not Blackstone.
That's beautiful. That's great. That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that there's stuff like that getting pitched to their clients. I mean, I don't know what Blackstone's managing now. I think it's about $7 trillion. I don't know what they have as AUM, but somewhere around there, BlackRock in the same category. So I think there's a lot of that going on. And I also see, I think a lot of, you know, those groups are buying too.
Right.
So, you know, I was following up on the negative yield thing you brought up earlier. And I was saying more like a lot of people are, you know, at that level of, you know, $10 billion invested with someone, the number one thing is don't lose it.
Right.
And if you lose a little bit, not a big deal, but you know, you're never going to gain more than a little bit because you're in all these risk-free instruments, you know, T-bills and paper and stuff. So that's why they take that little bit of a loss and don't worry about it. But you know, compound on top of that, that the dollar is really devaluing.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people are talking about this, but you know, when you see all this deficit spending, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, I mean, some for appropriate purposes, some not, obviously, depending upon what you think is right or wrong. But, you know, that's like a company issuing shares every time you print paper.
Right.
So, you know, the real value of the dollar has probably gone down 40 to 50% in it when compared to foreign entities. Now, it's kind of tricky because we will be the last one standing in any kind of currency apocalypse. But still, you know,
currency
apocalypse. You have to come up with a better name, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I like that. I actually like that.
So that's why everybody moves money here, because they know at the end of the day, we're going to do whatever it takes to keep $1, $1. And although it's really not, it is. So it's tricky. But, you know, to me, you know, I think if I'm a guy at a wealth management office or a client of theirs, you know, I'm looking to get more yield. So when Blackstone or BlackRock or anybody's saying, hey, you can go put half of it into crypto and here's some interesting opportunities, you know, you're going to do that.
Hell yeah.
So, but the big guys can't. So
no, that makes total sense. I love that idea of them using Saylor as a proxy. That's brilliant. Yeah, go play, Michael.
Yeah.
That's nothing to us.
Yeah.
Talk about a rounding error for Blackstone.
Yeah, you're like, you're still up. You know, you're up 100%, buddy. But once that goes down, you better be ready to buy a shitload more. More, yeah.
So I wanted to show, evidently there's a DNS issue for the Olympus DAO domain today, which is a little disconcerting. But I just checked Discord and it's only for some people. So evidently it's like, I can't get the page to load. Anyway, but they launched an interesting thing, there's this protocol called Pool Together, which, have you heard of Pool Together?
I don't know much about them, but I have heard it tossed around. Yeah.
Yeah. So Pool Together is a protocol that allows projects to set up, or I guess anybody can set them up if they want to, but it allows people to set up these pooled assets in kind of a lottery format. So it's called a no risk lottery. So the idea is in the case of Olympus DAO, and most of the time the setups are like this, you take your staking token. So let's just take Olympus. When you stake your OHM, you're given a token in your wallet called SOHM, right? Staked OHM. Mm-hmm. So you can hand over the rewards from that for, I think it's usually each round is 3 days. So if you want to, you can join Pool Together for the Olympus DAO lottery, and you give access to whatever number of your SOHM that you want to. And then all of the rewards that are that would normally go to your wallet and everybody else's wallet that's participating go into the pool. And then at the end of the 3 days, three wallet addresses that have staked into the pool get to split the amount of OHM that's coming in three ways. So it's a fun concept. You know, you take a bit of your OHM, you stick it in there and or your SOHM, and you put it in there. You're not earning rewards while that on that SOHM while it's in the pool. But, you know, right now the current prize is 224 SOHM, and it's only, you know, a half a day in. You could theoretically come out of it, you know, at the end with 100 OHM, right? So That's quite the jackpot if you're willing to play the odds. So for people that really love, you know, kind of things like lotteries and the whole degen kind of thing, this is to me a really degen kind of thing. I'm not going to take my staking out of the running, but they are. Excuse me 1 minute, Joe. Go ahead.
Sure. I was going to ask. So when you put that in, is it burning the SOHM or do you get it back?
No, you get it back at the end. Okay. You get it all back. All right, cool. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right, buddy. While Brad's gone, you know, just go through the charts. I can't share a screen just because I think this service only one screen can go. But, you know, go look again. The quick swap pools are still holding up. Hit that APY button. Lots of stuff up there in the multi-thousands. On Define, there are like three or four pools that are rolling over in about 40 hours. So, three, not tokens that I'm involved in, but still high yield. So keep an eye on those for Wednesday, I believe, because, you know, you'll have super high yields there for a day or so. So, you know, look at those, see the ones at the bottom that are expiring in a day and get some dry powder ready for that. And at least go in and grab some Define for a day or two until the yields drop and you don't like it. Nothing much on SushiSwap was attractive to me right now. Crystal's got some great stuff. I did move, Brad. Oh, you're back, Brad. I did move.
But I'm only
going to
be back for a second.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just going through the pools real quick. And I did start putting some of the Crystal into the Azuki urn bucket just because, yeah, I just was like, Azuki feels like it's getting ready to roll with all the NFT stuff in Japan blowing up big. Yep. And Seer Light did another sale for like 100 ETH of one of his works. And, you know, so I think that's really going to go. And I started gathering there. I'm also looking at, you know, kind of what this one called Atom or Cosmos. I don't know if you've looked at this much, but this is really interesting because it's a lot of cross-chain DeFi type stuff that we all talk about constantly.
Which one?
And although the Atom is the token, the company's called Cosmos.
Cosmos. That's a blockchain.
Yeah. This is one I'm starting to look at for the whole layer one strategy or the high-end protocols.
They're a cross-chain protocol, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yes. I'm dropping again, Joe. I'll be right back.
Go for it. And, you know, they're like, if we look at the protocols or the chains here, I'm seeing them. Oh, I saw them in here somewhere. They're in like the top 30, I believe, there. Where are they? And then if you look at TVL, let's see what they're holding here. They're on the list somewhere, but it's something that we're going to start digging into because I'm a big fan of, obviously, you know, Curve. you know, Matic, Phantom. And now I'm going to start looking at Atom and looking at an Aave as well. I'm going to start looking at some other ones that I think start making sense from my perspective of both undervalued and, you know, have a future. Another one is getting a lot of talk, Brad. I don't know if we talked about this, was Geist. Have you looked at Geist at all? They do a partnership with Ohm, G-E-I-S-T. No. They got like $3.5 to $3.25 billion TVL right now.
Is that what network, what chain, do you know?
Where is Geist? Okay, here we go. CoinGecko Geist. I'll just read what it says down here for you.
Oh, Geist, stop finding it. Lending and borrowing. Phantom. It's on Phantom.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's off a little bit today, but, you know, that's always an opportunity. So, yeah. You know, look at what they got. You know, they've got some pretty big inflationary angles on the token, which is not always my favorite thing, but, you know, there's a lot of talk. I think there was a new Ohm partnership. Yeah, I see them over on Spooky Swap. That's right. Yes, 24-hour volume, 6.7 million. So in a FTM Geist pool. I'm going to have to go find that one, actually. But, you know, it's one to look at. So of the new ones that I'm kind of, you know, in that theory of other, you know, other layer ones. And I, you know, for this purpose, let's just include Polygon in there as layer one, even though it's not, you know, we know it's layer two, but I don't see why that's not going to pop if Phantom's popping.
Yeah.
Or Solana's popping. So yeah. Terra's another one to look at. You know, Arbitrum, but they don't have a token. I haven't really figured out how to play that one yet. Heiko's there. So I think if I'm going to do layer one strategy, you know, obviously you're holding ETH. I don't have any BNB. I don't really have much Solana. I have a bunch of Phantom and Polygon, but Avalanche and Terra and Solana, I think, would be other ones to think about now. So you could earn Solana on, and Terra's token is Luna. There's a couple of Lunas, so make sure you get the right one. I think you can earn Luna on Crystal, and there's also Luna pools on Define. So, you know, I'm going to start accumulating those.
Right.
On top of, you know, my Aave and my Curve, which are at the top of the list on DeFi Llama's TVL rankings. But, you know, Curve, again, is you know, MCAP to TVL is 0.07 roughly, and Aave's is 0.26. So, you know, I mean, I think Curve's got a lot of room to run, because I think Aave's going to run too.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are ones to think about, at least the ones I'm thinking about.
Right.
And of course, you know, Sushi and Uni, they're down like in the 12 and 13 slot. You know, I just don't, I don't know. They could move. They got a lot of stuff going. I mean, actually, Sushi looks, Uni swaps at a 2.7 market cap to TVL, which is kind of high for me. So if I was going to pick from those, I'd probably pick Sushi or Pancake Swap. But the ones I'm focusing, Curve, Aave, MakerDAO is third, just so you know, which is another one to look at, and Compound 6. So any of those, just start accumulating, because, you know, I think there's going to be waves. And Ben Lilly said it really well, that, you know, as these other chains, layer ones, blow up, you're creating all these massive amounts of millionaires, and then they reinvest. So they tend to then go to the smaller DeFi plays. Now that's where things like Define and Crystal and, you know, all these groups come into play, Spirit and Spooky, because they're smaller, you know, a couple hundred grand market caps or TVLs. And, you know, they're going to start scaling up as everybody tries to bet on those. And then anything NFT. So think of it in a wave, like he said. But those are the ones that, you know, anywhere you can, you buy those and you pool them somewhere. So you, then you reinvest the money you get in a split between the two, you know, if it's Curve, between Curve and whatever. I think I saw Spirit Swap as an interesting feature, a Zapper, where you could just basically say, okay, I got 1,000 FTM, I want to put it in this pool, and you press one button and it sells half of it and buys the other corresponding half, and stake liquidity puts it in, and then you stake it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of ways to play on this. Now, so think about all of those, and then, you know, I did see, you know, Atom pooled on QuickSwap with a token called, well, there's a Atom Quick Pool, which is looking attractive. It's only, It sounds absurd, but it's only 350% APR.
It's only. Holy crap, yeah. That's just shit, Joe. I can't believe you even bring that up.
I know, it's a dog. Dude. But, you know, you get the quick and you buy Adam. So, you know, and then their partner, another pool there that I started digging into is a Adam paired with Erowan, E-R-O-W-A-N, called it's SifChain, S-I-F-C-H-A-I-N. I think it's ranked, yeah, it says 401 in the crypto rankings. But, you know, I got almost $500 million valuation, a TVL of about $60 million. But there's something that is attractive with this that I looked at, and I haven't figured it out yet, but there is a pool there of it. And I'm waiting to see. It's not posting the APRs. It's just like a, you know, that Nana thing, not the actual number. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on there. So expect that to post probably a high APR is my guess.
Nice.
So take a look at that if you want to accumulate Adam. So, okay. And then Phantom, obviously, I'm big on the spirit side, although I did jump back into the Treeb FTM pool on Spooky Swap. You know, looked at Treeb and I didn't even realize that it was up 5x on that already.
Nice.
You know, it's just like Spell. You know, I looked at that like last week, it was like an hour or a day and I was up, you know, 100%. So,
awesome.
You know, you find those kinds of things. And, you know, again, volatility is your friend.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not afraid to swing trade a little bit. But if you put in these DeFi farms, you don't really have to if you don't want to.
Exactly.
You just let it ride and keep accumulating. And, you know, you come out way ahead. So that's the pools. Wanted to get all that out there fast, Brad. So
that's great.
Kind of trying to do that each time. And what else? So we talk about Cosmos. You know, I want you to look more at that one and Adam.
Yeah, I will.
I just think there's something there that looks really interesting.
This is interesting. I don't know how. Oh, I know how I stumbled on this. They liked a tweet I did about CowSwap. Lie Finance Protocol Cross-Chain Liquidity Aggregator. Now, does that mean that does it automatically shoot it over in pairs? I got to check this out. This looks really interesting.
Yeah, I think I would have that up. Let me see. It was Qidao is the one I was looking at. Okay. But there are a lot of those out there. I'll have to look at Lee what?
Li.finance.
Okay.
It looks really interesting. I mean, if you could, what would be interesting is, so am I just moving liquidity from one chain to the next? Right. So, okay. So if I already have, you know what? We're not going to try to figure this out on the air, but,
well, you know, that top graph looks like the version of the Digital Axe website. We're just assaulted with so much information.
Exactly.
Like, now, we got to dig into that one, like in downtime.
Yeah, but exactly.
It looks promising. I mean, you know, another thing I tend to do real quick is, you know, when I'm in these pools, I'm also tracking how much percentage of my portfolio is on each platform.
Right.
So I try to be super careful not to get overweighted. So that's why I still hold some of the Azuki with ETH on Cometh or Must, just because I don't want it all on Crystal.
Right.
In case something happens to Crystal. So
sure.
You know, think about that, diversifying across platforms. Even if the yield's higher on one, I don't go all in on that, even if it's, you know, 100, 200% higher, just because, you know, I don't want to have any single point of failure on any play. So I tend to go across all of those ecosystems in somewhat balanced way. And then never having more than, you know, a couple of percentage points of my assets in any one liquidity pool.
Right.
So we'll dig into this for you guys, because I think this could be interesting. It looks like you're going to be able to lay across multiple platforms in multiple different swaps. Yeah, I mean, could be cool.
Okay. So last thing I have is Scoopy Truples that I just interviewed did this awesome tweet thread on DeFi 2.0. And he starts off talking about what you and I have talked about quite a bit and it keeps coming up with the founders that I'm interviewing for the podcast. And that is that founders are looking for more stability. They are tired of what liquidity mining brings them, right? Liquidity mining is great out of the gate. it's a great way to initially get things going, get people in your token, right? But then you're going to end up like this coin. He didn't say which coin it is. He just posted it that, you know, spikes up. This may be actually Alchemix. Maybe that was a joke. Spikes up and then drains out, right? And it's one of the reasons they're pushing really hard on the Olympus Pro bonding. But I think we're going to see more and more of these coming into play. But he talks about that. I think we're going to see less and less liquidity mining for established projects is my point. I think what will happen is people will launch, they'll have liquidity mining, they'll get tokens out there, they'll get a nice group of users and community built up, and then they're going to switch to things like bonding for maintaining their liquidity because this puts them in control of it. So this he goes into a really big description of that and why it's important, but that's not all he talks about. Then he dives into things like Tokamak and why they're important. Abracadabra and a couple of other projects. This is a really awesome thread for people to get introduced to projects that I agree with him will form the core of DeFi 2.0. I think we're in a transitional period. I think we're getting more responsible, more stabilized, more concerned about longevity and sustainability. The projects that aren't, they'll burn out just like it happens all the time with tokens. But I'm excited to see the projects, a lot of the bigger kind of fundamental plays, not my DGEN plays, my fundamental plays, really thinking about this and talking about it a lot. So I'm going to just retweet this real quick. Anybody can go to my Twitter thread and see it at the top right now because it's an awesome, awesome thread, really well written and gives great descriptions of each of these projects for people to be aware of and think about.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, some of this, the stuff that we talk about, you know, we go into these pools early, like I say, when it rotates and you get that, you know, 8,000, 1.2 trillion, whatever it is for a couple of days, and then you're out.
Yep.
And, you know, then you sell it and you go to the next one. Yep. So, you know, unlike in, and, you know, these are, liquidity mining is really replaced, I don't want to say replaced, but, you know, it's an alternative to other financing methods in the crypto world. You know, the original ones were obviously ICOs, IDOs, whatever.
Right.
This is a different way where you're not, you're clearly outside of the current regulatory framework. Which is what you want. ICOs, you're going to get popped. You know, it's just insane.
Exactly.
If you're even thinking about it, just stop.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at public companies, you know, IPOs. Okay, yep. So the IPO cycle is kind of interesting because, you know, you get it to where a bank's going to underwrite the IPO to raise money. You know, I don't know how many people know how this really works, but, you know, the night before the IPO, you know, when they price it, the bank is actually buying all the shares from the company at, like, you know, 10 o'clock the night before the IPO.
Right.
So, you know, you're going to go sell 10 million shares at 20. The bank, you know, buys all those at like 8.5.
Right.
Then they basically sell it. They keep some themselves and they sell it to all of their wealth management clients and give them a piece of the IPO, you know, on top of the friends and family stuff. And then they hold it. And then the next day it comes out at whatever, 12, 14, some of them sell right away and pocket that pop because those guys aren't in a 6-month lockup.
Right.
So, but everybody else who buys, or the friends and family people at least, are in that, in insiders, are in that 6-month lockup period.
Exactly.
So you kind of see something similar 6 months out where people are dumping. And, you know, so the best banks will keep stuff in reserve. So they know that date, of course.
Right.
And when that date starts coming, they start buying.
Yeah.
Because they want to keep the price up.
Joe, so, I got to drop it in.
Okay, go for it. So then I'll keep talking, but you go. And so then the next thing is, you know, you know, these bond offerings. So, you know, which is high-end commercial paper, or just call it commercial paper, that on the, you know, feeding trough, it's, you know, I mean, the highest, when companies go bad and they're getting liquidated, the first people that get paid out are the debt holders, which is usually, you know, banks, lines of credit, you know, primary debt type stuff. Then underneath that comes, you know, usually the bond holders, and then probably preferred stock, convertible preferred is probably right before that, I guess, because they would, Well, no, preferred. Yeah, probably convertible for then preferred, then common. So a lot of times the common stockholders, there's nothing left by that point. So, you know, you basically start, you know, bringing in more capital through these other ways. So it makes a little sense that in the crypto space, and by he's saying the fundamental ones, not these, you know, early stage startup degen things that we talk about, but in those higher quality ones, you know, you're going to see them start diversifying that capital stack into other instruments. It's probably the same reason stuff we talk about, no single point of failure. So, you know, if you have the crypto holders and then you probably have the crypto VCs, you know, then, you know, you're going to definitely get people coming in to be the crypto, you know, debt providers or the bond providers. So that's why I think Ohm and, you know, all of these other bonding type entities, you know, are going to do so well. Yeah, I was just going through the cap stack on how when companies liquidate, who gets the money,
right?
You know, and it's the, you know, usually the straight debt is top, then below that is convert bonds, below that is preferred stock, you know, breaking into convertible and straight, and then common. So I think that you're going to see these parallels in crypto where people are diversifying the cap stack. So it's not just all, you know, VC investors and retail.
Right.
That you're going to want to get more high-end paper in there for more capital that, you know, dilution's not really an issue, but, you know, you just want to diversify your risk across multiple providers. Because, you know, think, for example, you got a VC who's just pissing you off and you want to get them off. You know, you want to have a relationship with the commercial debt provider so you can go in and get more money from them to take out this, you know, a-hole who's bothering you.
Exactly.
You know, or maybe, you know, you want to take out, you know, you've got some high interest rate paper, you know, bond that you want to retire. So you go to the private equity guys or you go to the VCs and you're like, hey, man, I need $500 million to retire this bond. And, you know, they do it for you. So you're constantly cycling in the different aspects of the cap stack. And so this is an evolution of the ecosystem, which I think is all good. Yeah. So Tokamak, all those guys, they're on the right track.
Yeah.
Alchemix, et cetera. So
a quick note. It's funny. I had posted a Discord about the DNS issue on the website. And people immediately posted up IPFS access to the protocol. It's pretty amazing. We have a system that doesn't care if a website's down or up because there are other ways to interface with these smart contracts that are out there on the blockchain. It's awesome.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to discover before we go, can you pull up the route chart, our router protocol, that route token?
Yeah.
Because there was very.
What do you want me to pull up?
Just the chart for the last, you
like
know,
CoinGecko?
Yeah, anything that you can show a chart because I want to show the pump and dump there over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And what happened. And so, you know, we all routers at like 380 or 375, but, you know, is that showing the wick to 60?
This is router protocol. Is that what you wanted?
Is it showing? Yeah, is it showing a wick to 60?
It's showing a wick to $3.95.
Yeah, there was a whole instance. Let's see if I can find it. Because there was an instance happening over the weekend where router was spiked to $60 on layer one, Ethereum. And it was still holding at 350 on Polygon. And so people were trying to arbit and get out. Of course, you could never do that in time, you know, between layer two and layer one. But right. It was a KuCoin pump and dump group. So, you know, if you go into the router channel, you'll see like now all these people bought the dip at 12. I'm not trying to laugh at them, but I'm like, you know, look, if you see something crazy like that happening where all of a sudden it's soaring to 60 in a matter of seconds, just stay away.
Just stay the fuck away. Exactly.
Yeah, it's BS. And
exactly.
Sure enough, it goes back. So now all these people have bought the dip at 12. But, you know, interestingly enough, it's given so much publicity to router that maybe you could see it on Binance or on that. I don't know if it shows on. I was in a Telegram channel. They were all talking about it. But, you know, that it's just not going to be right. And certainly when it goes to 60 and back to 12 in a matter of, you know, an hour.
Yeah.
You're not buying the dip.
No.
You're buying the pump.
Okay. Exactly.
So stay away.
Exactly.
And, but, you know, there's been more publicity, more people know about it now. And the way the people in the channel engaged with everybody, you know, was really top notch. And then you see more people looking at it. So, you know, Router's got that Super Mesh thing coming out sometime this month.
Seeing it now. Hold on. I got it loaded up. Let me get it into screen. Hold on. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's just friggin' hysterical, man. You thought that Phantom chart looked good.
That's freaking hilarious.
Like, this is like, you know, zero. It's, what is it like?
It's like a one. That happened in like, what, 12 seconds?
Yeah, it was insane. And so, you know, but it got interesting because now everybody knows they got this Super Mesh protocol coming out. And,
right.
You know, and that's the real deal. I mean, that thing's been in audit for 6 weeks now. It's not quite done. Halborn's doing the audit. I mean, they're digging through everything. And they've had two other sets of audits, like White Hat Hackers and another one. And, you know, they're just trying to make sure this is perfect. So, you know, to me, there it is. Yep. Yeah, look at that, man. I mean, is that just the craziest of all you've ever seen, man?
Insanity.
I mean, I thought...
Insanity.
Some trick that, like, some people do, as Brad knows more better than I, is the stinky bid trick where you look at where the price is and you just set bids, like, all the 60% way up. Below it. Yeah.
Yeah, or down, so
So if it tanks, you know, and that wick is there, you know, you hopefully get your thing filled at some amazing price. But
yeah,
you don't want to do it on the other way. You don't.
Well,
you
there don't are wanna... people that'll buy down here, and all they do all day is put in bids up here to sell, right? So they're just counting on fat finger stuff or pumps, and that's all they play. You know, that's insanity. Wow.
Yeah, and that's right. There was that one big fat finger a few weeks ago where, who was it? Somebody like tanked on like 190 million of ETH or something like that. I can't remember. It was just insane. And I was, you know, you're all going, that intern just got fired. But, you know, that's when that's moving like that, guys, just stay away on the upside. Don't chase, you know, don't FOMO in.
No, stay as far away as possible.
Yeah. So,
That's all I've got for today, Joe. You got anything else?
No, I'm good. I'm good. You know, Pumptober's still rocking. Everything's looking good. I mean, I saw a little alt sell-offs yesterday, late afternoon, but I don't, you know, remember these numbers are always coming off, you know, the 24-hour hot previous price. So if you're a traditional finance guy, you're used to looking at, oh, it's up six off of the closing price or the opening price. Well, this is 24/7. So
exactly,
you know, you might hit a little time when it's spiked up. And you're looking at that, and all of a sudden everything looks like it's down 7%. But then you look at the price, and you're like, well, that's the same price it was 10 minutes ago. It's because of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, always dig in a little deeper before you react to price. What I like to do is, so I don't have to look at this all the time, is I just load up the CoinGecko app on my phone, and I don't log my portfolio in there, but I just do the watch list on the stuff I'm interested in and set the alerts for 10% moves either way on everything I'm tracking, particularly ETH. And then if something goes like that, then boom, I know.
Yeah.
And you don't have to sit there looking at charts all day. So, you know, just take the tools, use them, try to make good decisions, and stay, you know, have your price targets and stay convicted on them. You know, don't change strategy.
Yep.
But Brad could talk more about that next time because he's much more expert at that than I am.
Please. All right, buddy. Well, have a great
– Yeah, I was going to say, I'm just a gentleman farmer.
That's it. Have a great day, buddy.
You too, man. Talk to you later. See you tomorrow, everyone.
Bye-bye.